so the bill rise to the point.
Director Blair?
Here.
Director Simon?
Here.
Director Mendoza?
Here.
Director Fairbanks?
Here.
Director Small?
Here. All directors are present. The first item is approval of minutes from the July 19th meeting. I was in Florida during that meeting, so I can't make a motion. Chair will entertain a motion to approve the minutes from the July 19th meeting. I have a motion by Director Simon. Do I have a second? And a second by Director Fairbanks. All directors in favor of approving the minutes say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, no directors are opposed. Passed unanimously. Now, item number two is a public comments period. This is for anyone in the audience who would like to discuss a matter that's not on the agenda tonight. If you have an item that's not been agendized, but you'd like to say a couple of minutes about it, you're welcome to do so at this time. We ask only that you come to the mic and make it easier for us to hear. Is there anyone out there? Okay, so there's no public comments on not agendized items. We'll move on to item number three from the Board of Administration. This is the public hearing of the Federal Groundwater Management Plan. The Board of Directors has with us tonight Mr. Carl Howey from the California Department of Water Resources. Mr. Howey is the Chief Hydrologist for the Division of Local Assistance. He's involved in many aspects of that type of work, but especially disseminating information about groundwater and well standards. He's participated in erosion studies, exploration and groundwater studies, and has come from Sacramento to be with us today. I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Jones in the beginning to give us some background information and a brief introduction regarding what we're here to discuss tonight. Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Mr. President. We're here talking about this December 2 denosis that went out in the object of a possible forming a groundwater management plan that Mr. Carl Higgy can get into. These are some of the goals that was in the announcement going out. And basically, it's to develop a 4A groundwater management plan which provides the basin use with a long-term reliability and quality of water supply. Also, to protect the rights and beneficial uses of the groundwater users within the basin. This means all the users within the basin. And develop a 4A groundwater management plan which maintains local control, and Mr. Carl Higgy can get into the different methods over the groundwater basin to the fullest extent possible. And here again, the district is basically the local. To form a groundwater management plan, or AB 3030, you have to have a public entity to it. And in this local area, the public entity is in the Pomo Community Service District. The other public entity locally in this area is the County Flood Control and Water Conservation District, basically the Board of Supervisors. You get to the next level, then it'll be the state of California. So those are the agencies that could create a groundwater management plan in this area. Along with the public participation and involvement in the local groundwater management plan, the process in going through it, maybe Carl can explain, is there's a legislative process that you have to go through, and we have 80-30-30 legislation here that anybody can pick up. Like, we made about 50 copies that explains the procedure, how one is formed. And then develop an effort to use the resolutions and mechanisms to do that, instead of adjudicating groundwater basin, have the management agency there to dispute among users, resolve that. Then the agency also has a possibility of developing some funding the program to make it work. the Nacoma groundwater basin is part of the Santa Maria groundwater basin. This whole area is what's classified as the Santa Maria groundwater basin. The yellow area is basically the subunit of the groundwater basin overlying the Nacoma Mesa, basically just the mesa itself. You can come to the office and we can give you some of this information.
Which office?
The Nacoma office.
NCSD.
NCSD office. It's at the intersection of
261 West 10, Suite 100 and Suite 101. Well, I have plenty of time for questions. Let's let Mr. Jones get through just his opening briefing, and we're going to have all kinds of time for public questions.
This is the subunit and everything else. There are two projects, an AA and BB, which is the project down through the earth of the basin. And this is basically what it looks like. This is from the Moore report made a number of years ago. The DB one is basically from the freeway toward the ocean, the A is towards the valley. So this begins up here by Los Osos, cuts over, goes through the Santa Maria Valley, and up on the other, this is the bulk of the Santa Maria Valley. Here's the county line. This is the recent sand dunes, there's Black Lake Canyon. The dark gridded area is what they indicate as the groundwater storage above sea level. And then this is going out toward the ocean, here's sea level. And this is basically what storage the sand is. So that kind of gives you an idea of what the basin is and the makeup of it is. Turn back to the president.
Okay. We're going to have Mr. Carl Calgi come up now. He's got a presentation both on groundwater management plans, groundwater management methods, and he's going to get in a bit into the procedure involved in establishing a groundwater management plan under AB 3030. The way we'd like to work it is that Mr. Hawsey do most of his presentation, that the board be allowed a few minutes to ask him questions, maybe during, if it's real pressing, but preferably after his presentation, and then we're going to turn it over to the audience and allow the time that you need to get all your questions answered. So, if you'll allow Mr. Carl Calgi, I'll let him start.
Thank you, Steve. Good evening. I'd like to make one addition to what Mr. Jones said. He had this ascending hierarchy of who's going to manage the basin. He said the state eventually. Let me assure you that there's nobody at the state level that I know who wants to move in and start managing groundwater basins. The State Water Resources Control Board has what's called Section 2100 capability, and that means that if the water quality, groundwater quality in a basin is being degraded by some action that's ongoing, they can take a Section 2100 action, which means they petition a court to adjudicate the basin. But it doesn't mean that the State Water Resources Control Board manages the basin. The management is still a locally derived solution. There was a threatened Section 2100 action in the Santa Barbara area, and as a result, the water districts down there got their acts together and hired some consultants to start looking into groundwater in the coastal basins. There is now an ongoing threat of Section 2100 action by the State Water Board in Salinas Valley because of seawater intrusion in the Salinas area. It's 5 to 6 miles inland. It's beginning to threaten municipal water supply wells. And they also have a very high nitrate problem in a lot of areas in Salinas Valley. So the state board has said, Salinas, the Monterey County Water Resources Agency, get your act together and start managing your groundwater so that you don't continue to degrade groundwater. State Water Resources Control Board is concerned about water quality, the state's water quality. You may have heard about Bulletin 118. This was published in 1975. It's California's groundwater. And this has an inventory of what we knew about the basins in 1975. A lot has happened since then. After the 1976-7 drought, the legislature required that the department hold public hearings around the state. We held 22 public hearings, and we determined which basins were in a condition of critical overdraft, and that's defined in here. But if you're looking for a very specific definition, you'll be disappointed. It still depends on local management decisions. This was published in 1980. It's Bulletin 118-80. We're presently revising Bulletin 118 and trying to come up with some new values for water supply that we can rely on as perennial yield. But as you'll see, if I get to one of my overheads, the safe yield or perennial yield can change depending on the management practices. There were two handouts tonight, which I hope you all have. I only have a copy of one of them up here. This is one, and I'm going to start talking about this one. I'm going to talk about generally two things tonight. The first is...
They're on the table.
I think there's some on the table over here. I'm going to talk about two things tonight. The first one is what methods are available to manage groundwater in California. And the second one is go through the procedures of AB 3030. That is, what do you have to do to develop an AB 3030 groundwater management plan? If you look at what's available in California, there are these six methods right now by which you can manage groundwater. And these are outlined on that sheet that I waved at you. The first one is overlying rights. Those are the oldest rights that have been established. The second is local agency statutory authority. I'll get into that. The third is adjudicated basins. I'll get into that a little bit. The fourth is special legislation districts. And the fifth is AB 3030, which I'll talk about in a little while. And the most recent is county ordinances. There was an ordinance formed in Tehama County, which has created quite a stir in groundwater management circles. So I'll talk about each of these in a little more detail. Mr. Joseph's slide, which he made available, you can just kind of follow along. I don't have a bouncing ball, I'm sorry, but the first one is overlying property rights. In California, it was established a long time ago in some court cases starting in 1903, that if you own property in California, you have a right to everything below that piece of property, everything up to the heavens. It's a pretty impractical definition, but in essence, it says that you have a right to extract as much groundwater as you can use. The California Constitution requires that that be a beneficial use. However, that's defined by society and the management agency and the courts. The groundwater was available in many areas, and as a result of development of vertical turbine line shaft pumps in the 1920s, they began to extract a lot more groundwater, and groundwater levels began to decline, but they built up a local economy. They needed more water. That local economy allowed them to then help pay for an import project, and that was the solution to extracting more groundwater than was available in the basin. You went out and built an import project, imported surface water, and that took care of the problem. Most of that kind of management was done by this landowner over here, and that landowner over here, and this landowner over here. There was very little, if any, coordination until they got to the import project. But even though that sounds like it's no management, that is a form of management. And that's the form that is the oldest form in California. The second kind, in 1914, the Water Code was written. That's why you have pre-1914 and post-1914 water rights. The Water Code was written, and over time, 22 kinds of districts that can deal with water have evolved in the Water Code. And each of these districts has specific powers that are defined under, for example, a county water district or a community services district. Some of the districts have gone back to the legislature and had their part of the code amended so that they have additional statutory authority. So if you look at two county water districts, for example, you can't say that they have identical powers without going back and reading the water code. And if any of you have not read the water code, I recommend it to you. You'll never be bored again with anything else you do. The Water Code is a real mess. So over time, these 22 districts have developed or have acquired some statutory authority to regulate surface water. Many of them have also developed or acquired statutory authority to do something with groundwater. For example, there are several districts that have the authority to impose an extraction tax, but not many of them have exercised that authority. although they're now beginning to think about doing that. But you can imagine what happens when the landowners hear about that. The third method, adjudicated basins, is when somebody in a basin says, hey, you're pumping too much water, they go to court. The judge has then said, okay, everybody who's got a well is a party to this suit. Everybody becomes a party, and the shortest adjudication took 2 years, the longest took 24 years. I don't know how much each of them cost, but I'm trying to find that out too. What happens is the judge says, all right, we need a lot of studies, so engineers and hydrogeologists go out and they develop data about the basin. And this is why we keep emphasizing you've got to begin collecting data in your basin, because if you don't have data on your basin, you can't understand it, therefore you can't manage it. You'll hear me say again and again that it's like building a dam without knowing how much water is coming down the stream or how much you're going to use in various places. You wouldn't do it because you couldn't get the dam financed if you didn't know what you were doing with the water. And yet we operate a lot of groundwater basins without knowing what we're going to do with the water, where it comes from, how much is available, and so on. So when they go to court, the judge then looks at these studies and says, okay, landowner A, you can extract this much, landowner B, you can extract this much, and it all hinges on how much water is available in the basin. So if groundwater levels are higher, they get to extract more. If groundwater levels are lower, they get to extract less. The most recent adjudication that's been worked on is Mojave Water Agency, Mojave River. There's a temporary decree that has come out and is now going through some challenges by one of the local cities. In some cases, what happens is people in a basin realize they've got a groundwater management problem, groundwater supply problem. They get together and they work out an agreement among themselves, and they go to the judge and say, Judge, please do whatever judges do to make this a legal decision. And that's called a stipulated decision. The judge then appoints a water master, and the water master can be one person, or in one case, it is 9 people who are elected by a process from 3 districts and the 46 water purveyors in the basin. And then the water master is the body that hires people to go out and calibrate meters and determine that people are not over-extracting or extracting more water than they should. If they are, there is always something in the court decision that says if you extract more than you're allocated, then you have to pay for replacement water. And that's what has always been true in the past. When they had an adjudicated basin, they didn't really cut down their amount of water use. They just went out and got an import project. But those days are coming to a screeching end. The other thing that happened with adjudicated basins is the court always adjudicated for water quantity, not water quality. And I don't have a slide tonight to show you, but water quality and water quantity are inseparable. And 2 of these adjudicated basins, 2 of the water masters have now gone back to the courts, and they've requested water quality management authority. The courts have said, go write some regulations. They went and wrote some regulations. The court reviewed them and approved them. So now they, too, are part of the adjudication of those 2 basins. And I think that more and more basins are going to do the same thing. The fourth method is special legislation. And in some parts of California, the citizens have gone to the legislature, gotten a special act in the water code that allows them to form a groundwater management district or a water management agency. Pajaro Valley Water Management Agency is an example of one of those. Mendocino City Community Services District is another one. Agencies, there are only about 8 or 9 of them, and they can pass ordinances to regulate groundwater extraction and limit extraction. Only a couple of them have done so, and in 1980, when the first such legislation was enacted, everybody thought this was going to be the salvation of groundwater management in California. Well, I'm here to tell you that it didn't work out that way, and most of them are resounding, the fifth method is AB 3030, and I'll get into that in a minute, so I won't go into detail. I will say that the first bill that was passed was AB 255, and it applied only to critically overdrafted basins. There are 11 basins that have been defined as critically overdrafted in our bulletin 118-80, and as I say, some of that's changed now because of different management scenarios. But in those basins, they could have developed a groundwater management plan under AB 255. Everybody realized right away that there was much more interest than just those 11 basins. So AB 255 was repealed, AB 3030 was passed, and AB 3030 allows anybody in a groundwater basin to develop a groundwater management plan. It's not anybody, but certain local agencies that are defined. And the sixth and the most recent method is in Tehama County, a landowner built a well, extracted water, pumped it into the Tehama-Calusa Canal, wheeled that water two counties away and wanted to use it on his land. He was extracting from Tehama County. He was in Glenn County, or Calusa County, irrigating his land. Tehama County passed an ordinance that prohibited export of water unless the landowner has a permit from the County Board of Supervisors, and to get a permit, the landowner has to show that that extraction and water transfer will not deleteriously affect groundwater in the originating county. A landowner promptly sued. The lower court found in favor of the landowner, that is, said that the state preempts groundwater management. The county appealed, and the appellate court said that's not so, that the state does not preempt groundwater management. In fact, there is specific language in AB 3030 that says that AB 3030 does not preclude groundwater management by any other language in the water code. So and the plaintiff then appealed this to the state Supreme Court. The state Supreme Court refused to review it. So right now, the ability of cities and counties to pass ordinances to regulate and manage groundwater is on the table. That is, they can do it. I know of two counties where that's happened. Tehama County is one. They have also hired some people who have some background and experience in groundwater, so it looks like a fairly positive approach. San Benito County has passed an ordinance, and from what I have heard about it, it's a very adversarial thing between the county people and some of the water districts. This is just a part of a map of Sacramento Valley. You can see that the reason I show you this is some of those 22 kinds of districts. You can see that each one of these districts overlies a portion of the groundwater basin. This is the town of Williams. Here's Arbuckle. This is Interstate 5, this line that goes up and down here. Sacramento is right down here, just off the map. This is Sutter Buttes. This is all one basin in here, so there's only one area there, but there's a lot of land here that is not in a water district. Similarly, there's land here not in a water district, but there are different patchwork coats of different districts over here. I could show you a map of San Joaquin Valley, which shows the same thing. So you get a number of districts in the same groundwater basin, and you want to try to get them to manage groundwater to the benefit of all. It gets to be a political game. It's an institutional nightmare. The location of the adjudicated basins in California is shown on this map, and you can see that most of them are in Southern California. This is Scotts River up here, and the groundwater adjudication is incidental to the surface water. But notice that there are not adjudicated basins in a large part of California where groundwater is a very important resource. You have the desert basins out here, a lot of brackish water, so that's not too surprising. But this is San Joaquin Valley, and that's where they use most of the groundwater in California. Down here, this is Los Angeles County. You've got a bunch of them down here. This is in Kern County, Cummings, and Tehachapi. This is Mojave out here. This is Santa Margarita down in San Diego County. That's a federal adjudication because Camp Pendleton is involved. And again, in an adjudicated basin, you have to report how much groundwater you extract. In Santa Margarita, there's no limit on what you can use or extract, but you do have to report it to the water master. The special districts are located here. The circles are the special legislation districts. These three right here were formed in response to Reno coming up and saying we want to extract groundwater in California and pipe it over to Reno. This one has never been formed. It's Honey Lake Valley. These two have been formed, and they are taking some action to try to manage groundwater. This is the most recent one that was formed I think last year or the year before. It consists of five directors who are the only five landholders in the district. But that doesn't guarantee success, believe me. This is Mendocino. This is Pajaro Valley Water Management Agency. This is Ojai. This is Fox Canyon. This is Mono County Tri-Valley. Again, it was formed in response to a landowner there who wanted to extract groundwater, wheel it through the Department of Water and Power, LA facilities, and then wheel the power to Cascade Lake or some area down here down in Southern California. The stars that I've shown, this is Orange County Water District, which is not an adjudicated basin. It is a water district formed in 1937 or 33. They've done a lot of good things to manage groundwater, but probably most of them you couldn't do today because of the lack of consensus on the part of most people. This is a Monterey Peninsula Water Management District. They have an extraction fee. Orange County has an extraction fee. This is Monterey County Water Resources Agency. They could have an extraction fee, but as soon as they passed an ordinance to do some of that, they found themselves in court, so they've since rescinded them. This is Santa Clara Valley Water District. They thought during the last drought that they had the ability to impose differential pump taxes so that they would not reinitiate land subsidence at the south end of the bay. They found that they couldn't have a differential pump tax. They had to go back to the legislature and get special legislation. Now they can do that. Well, let's get an AB 3030. This would allow any local agency that provides, I guess you could read that. This defines what local agencies can develop groundwater management plans under 3030. It's a specific definition. It excludes some agencies, but it's a pretty broad field, really. And it lists specific data that may be collected and evaluated to conduct a groundwater management program. It doesn't mean that you're limited to those specific data. There are 12 components actually named in AB 3030. Some of them are repetitive. That's the way the legislature works. But you could add more, or you can only do a few. There are some agencies that have decided that, one agency, for example, has decided that four of these components are important in their area, and they're concentrating initially on those four. The area and agency power. It's a groundwater basin or any portion of a basin not subject to groundwater management by law or court order. So in an adjudicated basin, you couldn't do an AB 3030 plan unless the water master or the adjudicator, the court agreed. You can adopt and implement a groundwater management plan by ordinance or by resolution. Some local agencies can pass ordinances, some can't. They have to rule by resolution. The procedures are laid out very specifically in the Water Code. First, you have to publish a notice of a public hearing, which has been done before this meeting tonight. Then you conduct a hearing on whether to adopt a groundwater management plan. You can adopt a resolution of intention to adopt a groundwater management plan. That starts the clock. From that time, you have to publish a notice. Again, it's all a very public process, and that's part of the beauty, if there is beauty, as part of the good part of AB 3030, it's a procedure that is laid out in the Water Code. Everybody can understand it, and it's the same procedure for everybody. You have to publish a notice, and then you have to prepare a groundwater management plan within 2 years. If you don't get it prepared within 2 years, you go back to step one. You have to adopt another resolution of intention. Now, some agencies I know of felt that it would take more than 2 years to develop a groundwater management plan. So they've gotten together, they've built consensus, and they're developing their groundwater management plan before they adopt a resolution of intention. And that's fine, too. After the plan is prepared, the agency has to hold a second public hearing, as we noticed under Section 6066, I think, of the one of the codes. And then you have to consider protests. A majority protest consists of more than 50% of the land within the agency. and this is just land, not improvements to the land. And in the case of public institutions like University of California, they count as landholders as well. The problem there is assessing the value of that land. If a majority protest exists, if 51% don't want to adopt the plan shall not be adopted, and no new plan for the same area can be considered for 1 year. If there is no majority protest, the groundwater management plan can be adopted within 35 days after the second public hearing. Now, keep in mind, we're talking here about a plan. A plan is defined in the water code, and so is a program. But there are two parts to this game we're playing here. One is the plan. The plan doesn't do anything for you except tell you where to go, what to do. What really gets the job done is implementing the plan, which then becomes the groundwater management program. To do that, there is a series of other steps that you have to take. The agency can adopt rules and regulations to implement and enforce the groundwater management plan, but they can't determine water rights. Nobody knows how this is going to play out, but that is in the water code. This agency cannot determine water rights. You can't limit or suspend extraction unless studies show that replenishment is insufficient to lessen the demand for groundwater. So if what you're doing so far still allows groundwater to decline, then you can begin to limit extractions. But you must consider the potential impact on business activities and, consistent with groundwater protection, minimize adverse impacts on business. All of this is... It can be used, but there's nothing here that's mandatory. The agency has the authority of a water replenishment district. And if you read AB 3030, it refers to a couple of other parts of the water code. But if you go to those other parts of the water code, it gives the local agency under AB 3030 significant power, always subject to a vote of the electorate. So they may fix and collect fees in accordance with that part of the water code. They may impose equitable annual fees and assessments for the costs associated with acquisition of water, administrative and operating costs, and capital facilities. So this says that you can do things to improve the groundwater situation in the basin. And the proposed fees. If a local agency must hold an election on then proposal to assess and fix fees for replenishment or extraction of groundwater, the election is conducted in the manner prescribed for that agency or as a local election. Now this is a little bit different than the first election. The first election related to value of land. This is just according to the election rules that govern that particular agency. If the majority of votes cast are in favor of the proposition, the agency is authorized to impose fees. No agency I know of yet has imposed fees. One agency has decided they are not going to try to impose fees because as soon as they vote some fees, they figure the governor is going to run off, or the legislature will run off with them. So what they're going to do is use the fees that they are already collecting under other parts of their statutory provisions. The AB 3030 requires that you coordinate with other agencies. That authorized local agencies within the same basin are encouraged. Again, there's no hammer here. It's just you're encouraged to implement a coordinated groundwater management plan. You can enter into a joint powers agreement or a memorandum of understanding and with private parties to implement a coordinated management plan. A joint powers agreement is something that can be entered into by various agencies of government, but not private parties. So, for example, a water company cannot enter into a joint powers agreement, but they can enter into a memo of understanding. People are always interested in limiting extraction, so this just defines what limiting extraction consists of. I'll let you read it. So what it says is, if the other sources have proved insufficient or infeasible to lessen the demand for groundwater. So none of this can be done willy-nilly. There has to be good reason for it. The 12 components that are listed in AB 3030 consist of the control of saltwater intrusion. Now people, when they hear saltwater intrusion, all they think of is sea, the ocean. But there are five other methods of getting salt in your groundwater, some of which can be controlled, some of which can't. Every time you irrigate with water, it picks up salt. So that's just something that happens. We have no control over that. But there are other things that we do have control over. For example, well standards that allow leakage from one aquifer to another. And so when you think of saltwater intrusion, don't just think seawater, think of saltwater. Under every aquifer in California, there is saltwater. There is a saltwater-freshwater interface in San Joaquin-Sacramento valleys. It varies from about 400 to 3,000 feet in depth. The second is management of wellhead protection areas and recharge areas. It's in some countries, in France and Germany, there are signs that say water recharge area, do not contaminate. But we don't do that in this country. We do that for surface water reservoirs. We say this is a public water supply, don't contaminate it. I've got slides to show some of those signs. But I've never seen a sign in California, for example, that says this is a groundwater recharge area, don't contaminate it. I've never understood why we don't have parallel activities for groundwater as we do for surface water. A wellhead protection program is a U.S. EPA program, therefore it is needed by many people, but it's a good way to start helping people understand that, look, this is where your groundwater goes when you dump this oil on the ground. Oh, the third is control of movement of contaminants. That gets into another complex subject. There are floaters and sinkers and mixers. Some of these synthetic organic compounds are lighter than water, they're less dense, so they float, toluene, gasoline, benzene. They float, so when you lower groundwater levels, you're helping to contaminate a larger part of the aquifer, because as the groundwater level goes down, that toluene or benzene is contaminating more and more of the sediment. It comes back up, it's absorbed to some of the sediment, so it doesn't go away, it's now in the sediment. Some of them sink, they're denser than water, so they sink to the bottom. And if you have a groundwater gradient that goes in that direction, but the slope of the bottom of the aquifer goes in that direction, this contaminant will not go with the groundwater, it will go downhill in the opposite direction. And then some of them mix with water. Each of these are very, very complicated, and when you hear about site remediation, it's not always, in fact, I don't know of anyone that's been totally successful. There's always going to be some contaminant left behind. Even if you get a lot of it out, it's an asymptotic curve toward the end. You pay more and more, you get less and less out. The best way to keep groundwater a usable resource is the 3P rule, which is prevent contamination. Mitigate well abandonment and well destruction. I've already touched on that. That's another important aspect. I noticed there are two water wells out in the back here. When I got here a little bit earlier, I looked at them, and I don't know if they're both being used, but they're about 10 feet apart. A lot of times a well is not being used, it's just kind of walked away from. And then as the casing corrodes and disintegrates, if you have two aquifers, you develop inter-aquifer connection. If the water is the same in both aquifers, you're okay. If one of them is a lower quality, you're not okay. These are problems that are like ticking time bombs. You don't detect them until many years from now. So that what we're doing in many areas is giving our progeny real problems to deal with in terms of a groundwater resource. Mitigation of overdraft is real simple. You either stop extraction or you get more water from somewhere else. Either imported surface water, recycled sewage effluent, or water conservation. And replenishment of extracted groundwater, that's kind of the same thing. This is where the repetition comes in. The last six are monitoring groundwater levels and groundwater in storage. And again, I'll go back to data. If you haven't got it, you better start getting it, because you really can't understand your groundwater basin or your aquifer without data. A surface water reservoir, you go up and look at the dam, you can see where the water level is. But when you talk about an aquifer, you're talking about a three-dimensional object into which you cannot see. So what you're really relying on is a well at this location telling you something about this invisible three-dimensional object at a well at this location. But then you have to interpolate what's in between. And as a geologist, who's done a lot of that, I can tell you that you're usually wrong. But it's fun guessing anyway. But the point is that the more wells you have, the more you know about the aquifer. But it's something that a lot of people say, well, even in the state, at the state level, a lot of managers don't understand the value of data. It's very, very important. Facilitate conjunctive use. That just simply means you manage your surface water and your groundwater together so that you maximize the water supply. Identify well construction policies. We talked about that already. This is some of the duplication. Build and operate cleanup, recharge, storage, conservation, recycling, and extraction facilities. These are those capital facilities that were talked about in the finances. Work with state and federal agencies. That seems like it's obvious. Nevertheless, it's in here because some people don't understand that. And the last one is review land use to avoid groundwater contamination. Now, this is an issue that is creating quite a few shockwaves in various parts of California now, because on the one hand, you have water supply agencies. On the other hand, you have land use agencies. And the two don't even live in the same universe. And if you try to get them to talk to each other, one or the other feels like their toes are being stepped on. There is some change in that occurring now because some of the people are beginning to realize that land use decisions do affect water supplies, and water supply decisions do affect land use capabilities. So it's an important part of water management. And I'm frequently asked, what are the benefits of groundwater management? And the benefits are real easy to describe. You share costs equitably, you share the benefits equitably, and you share surpluses and shortages of water equitably. The reality is that there is a limit to the amount of water that's available. It may vary a little bit from year to year. We have to recognize that. Everybody is going to have to give something up. Hopefully to get something which says that, okay, your annual water supply will be at least this minimum. AB 3030 also requires that our department by 1 January 1998 publish a report documenting those agencies who have completed an AB 3030 groundwater management plan. I have an outline here which I can make available to you, a draft outline for that report. What's interesting is that when I first took this to the Association of California Water Agencies and said, here's the outline, I got two comments. The second one was, why don't you show metric units as well? That's pretty easy to do. The first one, though, was, why are you only showing the AB 3030 plans? Because there may be some other kinds of groundwater management pursuant to other parts of the water code. And so now we're going to include all groundwater management plans, 3030 or not. And that's why I started out by showing you that list of six methods of groundwater management. Oh, the other kicker in this is that AB 3030 does not require that any of these agencies tell us anything. So we have to go out and ask what they're doing. Conclusion, two slides for that. The district here may already have authority to manage groundwater. You need to look at what the district enabling legislation is. The complication here is you have two other entities that you need to deal with, the county and the Cal Services. 3030 provides a mechanism for agencies in the same basin to coordinate water management for mutual benefit. And again, it's going to rely on consensus voting. There's no hammer in AB 3030. There are several ways you can do it. You can go to court and adjudicate it, or you can do an AB 3030 plan by building a consensus and learning about the basin. Whatever road you choose, you're going to have to learn more about the groundwater basin that you live on. That's a given. Whether you go to court or you do it yourself, you're going to have to learn more about the basin. Either way, you're going to have to build a consensus if your program is going to be successful. Just an aside on that, the attorney who worked on the Mojave Water Agency suit I was on a panel with him recently in San Francisco, and one of the things that he pushed was that they were able to build a consensus in Mojave River. It's the first time I've heard consensus used with adjudication, but I think it's a positive step forward because that's really what we're talking about. And then, so far I've been saying there are other methods of groundwater management, but there are some advantages to AB 3030. And these are the two that I was able to think up. The procedures are spelled out in the water code, providing a sense of legitimacy. I don't mean to imply that the water code is legitimate, but it is the law by which we operate, and therefore it does provide a kind of a keel that we can rely upon until it's changed. The procedures ensure a public, systematic, repeatable, and understandable process. And I think that's important because there's so much myth about groundwater. I hear of conduits from the Sierra Nevada to San Francisco, from the Sierra Nevada to Santa Cruz, from Tahoe to LA. It's unbelievable how much misunderstanding there is. This is a process that everybody can understand. And all you have to do is start learning about your basin. And with that, thank you.
Is there anything, Mr. Jones or Councilor, that you would like to add to Mr. Hartman's presentation at this time?
Just one point that I would add.
You might want to pick up the mic there.
I don't pretend to be an expert on AB 3030, so far off. If I say something that is incorrect, I expect that you would just jump in and correct what I said. One is the ability of an AB 3030 district to manage residential use of the groundwater. AB 3030 contemplates severe limitations on the ability of a district to manage residential use. There has to be a finding by, I think it's the Water Quality Control Board, a resource board, that the basin is in a critical condition. So residential uses are very only being regulated. It would not be in the Pomona Community Services Board of Directors. The managers or the board members that would govern the agency would, there's a variety of ways that they could do it, but the most, one that's most commonly used is an appointed agency, which would mean, like, for example, Southern California Water Company may, who is a large water purveyor, over the basin back there. Basically, the managers, the board, the board members themselves would come from. would come from the area that overlies the basin. Okay, so people are out there are thinking that it would be the Public Community Service District board members would be the managers of this agency. That would be an incorrect thought. Certainly, a member of this board may be appointed to the agency. A member from Southern California City Water Company would like to be appointed. Clearly, a person from CAG would likely be appointed. A person from the county would likely be appointed. And maybe a person from the Mutual Water Companies or a member elected at large. those are all things that would go into the composition of the plan. But it's one thing is clear, that the Bumble Community Service District Board would not be the board for the water district. It would be comprised of all the people that use the water or a delegate from that use.
If I could expand on both of those, domestic oils are specifically excluded in AB 3030. It's toward the end. I don't have a copy with me, but so domestic oils were recognized and were excluded. On the second point, John has raised a good point. That is that if you were to form an AB 3030 district, Cal Cities is a water company, so they can't enter into a joint powers authority. It would have to be a memo of understanding with the other two agencies, which is the Pomo CSD and the County Flood Control District. And as John points out, what that means is that in working out that memo of understanding, that would be the time at which you would determine who would be on the board from each area. And it would include members from all of the area inside this black boundary.
This isn't a legal analysis, but more or less a factual analysis. Many of you knew when I did attend the Chamber of Commerce seminar on what the opportunities were in up on the Mesa. One of the underlying factors that is driving this is, of course, is the Mesa is a prime development area. And I think everybody that lives up here understands a good percentage of what's going on in the county as far as development is going on up here. There are three golf courses that are in various planning stages at the county, and I believe, if I read the newspaper right, there's 1,000 new homes that are in the works. We have a finite supply of water that's in that basin. And what concerns everybody about it is there really enough water in human beings and purity, not only for our generation, but the future generation, taking into consideration these new demands that are going to be placed on this groundwater basin. Secondly, there are a new, at least two, possibly three, I haven't read them all, studies that are out there that state to one degree or another that this basin is likely in an overdraft situation. Now, there's been one report, the California report from the state of California, the 1994 report, estimates that somewhere around 6,000 acre feet per year overdraft, which basically means that the water that's coming into the basin, we're drawing out approximately 6,000 feet more. Now, these are studies, so I don't want to over-legitimize them, but they are, another study that says about 4,000 feet, and that's been the Fish McFarland report a couple years ago. So there is some, and I guess the third thing, as I point out, is that the county, in their resource management plan, has designated this area as a severity 2 as far as water goes availability, which means that we should manage our water and look at the water situation carefully. I just give you that background as to what's going on in the county and development.
In processing the plan, this is the plan after the procedure is we publish the notices there's a hearing now, and then if the board proceeds to adopt a resolution and intention of putting a groundwater management plan together, then they'll address gaps and probably come with a draft, which we'll kind of work on for prematurity. But we'd like input from everyone on the Mesa, have a steering committee to review the draft, and make sure we get everyone's input into this draft plan, which eventually will be brought back and have another public hearing to get input into it. So If anyone's interested in keeping with the direction of the Board of Directors here, proceed. If we go that direction, we'd be interested in receiving people representing certain areas in agriculture, greenhouse association, private water companies, mutuals, etc., to form an experience committee to review a draft to put this groundwater management plan together and decide jointly how the best way to operate and manage it, please.
Some preliminary timelines we're talking about establishing the drafts of the groundwater management plan. I think we're outlining our package. And correct me if I'm wrong, it's around for a first rough draft around 90 days, and then a second draft at about 150 days. And throughout that period, we see public input from interested parties. Is that correct?
Those other guidelines.
And we're not, those are not hard and fast cutoff dates by any means, but what we're trying to suggest here is it's going to be a process where there'll be time for inputs from everybody. I think what I'd like to do now is just, if it could take about 5 or 10 minutes to allow the presenters to catch their breath. The board members will formulate a few questions, and we'll ask him if Mr. Hoggin, when we get back from the break, and then we'll get right back into the questions by everyone out there.
Anyone has have a copy of the 83030, the actual legislation? There's some copies on the table over here. It's 23 pages and explains the whole procedure.
Majority protest, or 50 point, whatever.
Yeah.
Yes, you go to the tax assessor and look at the rolls.
When you said that domestic wells are excluded, that's a concern. What do you mean by domestic wells are excluded? They're excluded from the management plan, or they're excluded from any... Just explain that.
Do not apply to the extraction of groundwater by means of a groundwater extraction facility to provide water for domestic purposes to a single unit residence and to a secondary unit like a granny unit. So the groundwater management plan does not apply to single residence wells.
Okay, and the groundwater, were
you
see in a state of overground to a very serious degree, what happens?
Usually what happens is wells go dry.
Probably domestic first.
Huh? Probably domestic first because they're usually the shallowest, right? This is a pretty standard thing, though. And I'll go back to the Mojave Water Agency, Mojave River adjudication, and they've exempted, I think, up to 10,000 acre feet a year. Yeah, well, it was a practical reason because they're very small producers, whereas a very small percentage of landowners in the valley are very large producers. And it was just 4,000 people that have to keep track of.
I have a question. In section chapter 4, section 10754.3, it says, before a local agency can levy water management assessments or otherwise fix or collect fees for replenishment or extraction of groundwater, local agency shall hold an election on the proposition of whether the local agency has the power or shall be authorized to levy those fees. The local agency shall be authorized if the majority of the votes cast at the election is in favor of the proposition. No, it says the election shall be conducted in the manner prescribed by laws applicable to local agency. Can you say for a moment, can you speak for a moment to what specific laws we're referring to there and how that election may take place? As to the area of participants, would it be MCSB boundaries only? Would it be everyone in the proposed groundwater management basin?
That would be the answer. Everybody was in the proposed groundwater management district. And when it says laws applicable to the local agency, if, for example, a water storage district were to take on a groundwater management plan, they have specific election directions in the water code. Whereas if you form a three or more party water management district, then you would have to hold the tell how you were going to hold the election according to whatever code governs that kind of an organization. So that's something, this leaves a lot of questions unanswered. You'd have to go back to the various codes, and maybe John's got the codes memorized.
The intent of the section is to conduct a vote within the area that should be affected by the fees, right? Isn't that the intent?
That's exactly the intent, and I was telling somebody during the break that if you establish a zone of benefit that only takes in a small amount of the area within that dashed line so that the people benefiting are limited to a specific area, that election would take place only in that specific area.
The emergency, and when you get emergency, I mean a full blown out emergency, like somebody on this board wrote this board, you know, says that we're in overdraft, we're don't have any water. Does this mean now that you shut down all the wells, including the domestic wells?
The answer is no. What These things never happen quickly. You have to, I'll go back to the data, you have to have a data collection program, you have to have understanding of how the basin operates so that you know what's happening in the basin. And if groundwater levels begin going down, then you'll become aware of that, you should become aware of it almost immediately. And so you'll have time to prepare. But the other side of that is that this is a question that really ought to be addressed right up front. That is, what happens if groundwater levels continue to go down no matter what we do? Then the board and the board of this larger groundwater management district ought to look at that and come up with some kind of a contingency plan. That is, what are your options?
And in the election, who votes in the election? Property owners only or for the general population?
In the first election to adopt the groundwater management plan, it's property only, property owners only. In the second election, it's a general election.
That needs to assess fees. So that means if people don't operate, don't own property, they're going to be allowed to assess fees on the people that do own the property.
And themselves, yes.
If they don't own property, how are they going to assess it on themselves? Well, it seems to me that we're going to just, this is like a property tax, like hanging out there in the sky somewhere.
Well, but it also, don't forget you have a lot of municipal users, so it would come back to them in terms of water rates. And that's the whole point, getting back to the equitability formula. Work out something that's equitable for everybody.
Can I have a final show of hands? Just those people out there that think they might want to ask a question or two of the board or our presenters tonight, just raise your hand so I know about how much time you're forcing. Okay, it looks like 15 or more, 5 minutes apiece, and 75 minutes, that would put us out of here 10 or so. Let's try to limit to 3 minutes on the presentation, if we can. And then if we need more time and everyone's got energy, we'll stretch it out. So let's have the first presenter. Can I have a hand? Okay, I'll take lady in the front row here. Could you go to the mic, please, and say your name? And just say briefly whether you live within the basin or not. This is the proposed area that is the outline, this dotted line, and not everyone can see it, but it's an NCSD area, Cal Cities area, Mesa, Golf Course, Summer Station, and there's even foothills. Alpatep, Moscow Road, and Thompson is included as well. This is just a tentative layout. Nothing has been established, but if you live within that area, I think you please state so. Okay, ma'am, go ahead.
My name is Michelle Hodd, and I'm Secretary of State of the Laguna Neighbor Mutual Water Company, and the track that this distributes water to is between Sheridan and Waukesha Road, and just south of Laguna Negra up to Callender Road. We are overlying the uses of the Nacomo Measure subunit. The only thing I am concerned about, and the other members of our organization have asked me to keep coming to these meetings and speak to it, is that the largest purveyors in this area appropriate, according to newspaper reports, over 75% of the water that is used from a subunit. They do not own the water that they are distributing. And we would like to bring to your attention that cooperation and credibility would be increased if continued office of service and expansion of sphere of influence would be halted or at least severely curtailed until the data that Mr. Hogan is talking about is gathered. All the meetings we've come to have indicated that there is very little data on the size of the Nacomo Measure subunit and very little data as to its incidence. And yet, each week we read in the paper about more and more wheelchairs being offered by the various lodge purveyors and appropriators. So we would like to cooperate in helping you gather that data, but we also would like to urge you to discontinue this offer of service to more and more users, to more and more developers, which will create more and more users until you know precisely what we've got out there and how long it might last and whether it's going to be replenished. I understand that more of any of us has been ordered by the state to cease and desist pulling water from the Choro basin. And they, at least, have state water and desalinization plants to rely on. We have none of that. State water has been denied by the voters, and there is no desalinization plant. So caution needs to be exercised in expanding the sphere of influence of the various purveyors, like, such as Calcities and Community Services District. And beyond that, we certainly will cooperate with the gathering of the data. Thank
I, for one, see the annexation issue as one of the hottest issues in this area. And I can only speak for myself, but I feel much like our presenter does, that I don't want to be premature about large annexations until we have a firm grasp on the water situation. And that's one of the reasons I think this groundwater management plan is important, because it can really identify and define use and costs, and it may also provide us a vehicle for obtaining a supplemental water source, which is eventually what we're going to need for this area. Would you like to add anything? We go round and round all the time with that decision. Your point is well noted. Can I have a second question? Yes. And I must accept my apologies. Supervisor Brackett, I introduced Roger Brackett. I didn't get it under Bruce Brackett. This is our supervisor, Bruce Brackett from San Luis Obispo County. If you'd like to speak to us, I'm welcome.
Well, I'm going to ask some questions that I think are on a lot of people's minds. And the first question is, you look at that map, the Como Community Services District's boundaries are fairly small compared to the large areas on that map as opposed to groundwater management district. And it was explained earlier that the county Board of Supervisors sitting as the flood control district would be a player in this. And so since the county represents the largest part of this proposed district, the question comes to mind, where is the county? Why aren't they sitting at the table as equal players here? Why is the district the lead agency? Those questions have been asked to me. And quite frankly, I don't know the answer, because sitting as one member of the Board of Supervisors, this has not been discussed by the board or the flood control district. Along those same lines, when it comes to appointing people, if the flood control district makes appointments, you only have one elected official from that district or the Board of Supervisors that represents the area. So four supervisors who represent the rest of the county to control the SIP, representing the largest part of the proposed area. I think that is a major, major concern. It is a major concern with me. Again, in politics for over 20 years, I know what happens. And so it's a major, major concern. Earlier, Mr. Hoyt discussed financing and fees and indicated that, I believe he said, most districts have not imposed these fees. And yet you're talking about a lot of capital projects, the money is going to have to be laid out.
where is this money coming from? You indicated it would be borne by the agencies, again, from the county's electrical part of it, and of it, if we were part of this, which we would have to be given the wide area we're covering. You know, I've got a lot of questions about how we carry that out. I also have a question about section 10753.7E, which is mitigation of overdraft. There's a lot of discussion going on in the community about metering of wells. It doesn't spell out what kinds of things happen when you're mitigating an overdraft. There's also a big dispute amongst the people here. I don't think we have all the data. There's conflicting reports. Do we really have an overdraft? How severe is that overdraft? And those kinds of questions need to be answered. And a lot of us feel a lot more information has to be gathered before this kind of thing takes place as far as setting up a district. Someone mentioned that Napomo, under our resource management system, is in a severity 2. I'd like to have clarification about that. Is that the urban area of Napomo? Is that the entire basin? If you look at the proposed district, you've got the Napomo Valley, which is agriculture, and that's a totally different kind of a water supply than the very large basin that's on the central part of the mesa that stands out under the ocean. I don't believe districts get any of its water from within its boundaries. It gets it from the central part of the mesa. And those are my main questions.
Okay, now Mr. Sykes, go ahead.
I'm happy to address a couple of the points that Supervisor Bragg made. First of all, I just want to briefly touch on the concept of well metering. That's what's commonly known as the M word. It's not, as far as I know, widely implemented other than the ones that are state imposed, like the Salinas Valley. But the district would have to gather resources, read the data on what is being extracted from the groundwater basin. One of the ways that can be accomplished is by metering. It is not, as far as I know, in the studies that I have read, the favored way of measuring extractions. There are a lot of ways, and I don't know if there's any engineers in the, there is one, district engineer, but basically you can come up with a pretty good figure about what is being pulled out of the basin by taking a look at the demographics and land use. And you can also take a look at what's being pulled out by the electrical use, especially in ag. How much wattage or voltage is being drawn, amperage, and crop factors. For example, it's pretty well accepted that a residential unit draws approximately 1 acre foot per year. That's the figure that is standard about. That's a pretty easy figure. For example, the wells used by the FOMO are in the public domain, so everybody's going to know what those are. For ag, you can take crop use and amperage or what you use in electricity, and you can make a determination of what type of water. It may not be the most accurate way that you can measure water consumption by ag, but it is a viable one. It is one that I personally have experience with and is used.
Well, you love these shows and everybody's reaction, don't you? John makes a good point, and I can add to it a little bit by saying Fox
not in Fox Canyon, in the United Water Conservation District in Ventura, in Ventura County, they have allowed all three methods. You can use the crop factor, or ET, that is, to grow a certain crop, it takes a certain minimum amount of water to produce that crop, otherwise you don't produce the crop. So you can use ET for the crop, you can use the electrical meter records, or you can use the flow meters on your discharge line. When I asked last year how many landowners they had on each one of these systems, the district didn't even know. They had to go back and look through their records and compile those data. And I've forgotten what the percentages are now. But the interesting point is that more and more of the landowners are switching over to flow meters on their wells because they think it gives them a better deal. So there you have it, folks. And there are some meters. Salinas, the Monterey County Water Resources Agency, passed an ordinance requiring meters. If you drive through Salinas Valley now, and I know all of you stop and look at wells just like I do, a lot of the wells up there have meters on them. They've gone back and retrofitted them. And it's interesting because to put a meter on accurately, you have to be 8 pipe diameters away from the discharge point. And to get that in some of the wells, they had to build a big U-shaped well, the big U-shaped pipe together. So it looks like a Rube Goldberg operation, but they've done a good job getting the right distance away. Westlands Water District has meters on about 70% of their wells, and the landowners collect the data, but we never see it. I presume the district uses it for some purpose, but there aren't very many areas except in the adjudicated basins that have meters on them. The other thing about meters that you have to take into account is you don't just put a meter on a pipeline and walk away from it. You have to go back every 2 years minimum and recalibrate it because they get out of calibration. The other thing is that some meters are better than others. UC Extension Service has done studies to determine which meters are the best and integrate the overall flow inside the pipeline, because inside the pipe, getting off on a tangent here, but inside the pipe, the flow is not uniform. It's faster in the center than it is along the edges. That's pretty logical. Some meters don't integrate that.
Mr. Jones, could you speak for a moment as your previous conversation with county representatives regarding this intention of the resolution to form a groundwater management plan? That was also one of Supervisor Brackett's concerns.
Yeah, we've had conversations with members of the engineering department, and they're generally in favor of the concept, and we've had conversations with some of the board members, and they feel it's a conservation aspect of the management of groundwater basins. So there's a general concept of acceptance of this kind of process.
We have not had public hearing.
Let me address that. I don't think this is the first public hearing that we have had on this topic. There's no question about that. Now, this very topic has been agended on 2 separate prior agendas, and there's certain people that are in the audience that I recognize that attended those prior meetings here. The point that the county has not had considered 8330 appeared is true, but one agency has to get the ball rolling. Okay, it's just started off, and that's what this the Public Community Service District is taking a look at now. It was, the method was not meant, nor is it intended to exclude the county participation. In fact, the resolution that is before the board later on tonight, if it's passed, specifically mentions not only the county, but the water company and ag's participation in drawing the plan. The issue about the plan itself will address those types of issues. The formation of the plan addresses the issues of who would be on the board members, how they would be elected, and so on and so forth. The county is specifically mentioned, and I think they tentatively agree, at least in the engineering department, I recognize, because I don't think the board supervisors, the board of flood control district.
Well,
Right. Right. I know. I understand that. One of the drawbacks of the elected official. But anyway, it is all planned to be public. It is all planned to be inclusionary. In other words, everybody would participate in it. And we would expect that this matter would be attended on the County Board of Supervisors, but as you know, but it's going to take the engineering department or a board member of the supervisors to place it on the agenda for the public. Districts have a very poor record of getting things on the agenda for the Board of Supervisors, as a general rule. The basin itself, there was a question about the county resource plan. The county resource plan, as addresses the severity issues, takes in the entire Napoma Mesa subunit. So it is the subunit that that is outlined on the board. Now, one of the things that you have to realize that even the outline of what the district would look like is subject to the plan. So staff put together something that is up there on the board for the purposes of discussion, not for the purposes of saying this is it. But if you don't, what we try to do there is accurately, but from the best information that we have available to us now, is draw a circle around what most reports describe as being the basin. Okay, so, and those properties that are currently served by the basin. I probably had that in there too. So this, again, the very outline of what would be included in the district would be the subject of the plan.
Isn't the exception the land on the east side of Thompson Hill? That area is not overlying the
so right, but I think it's being served by the
Some of it is.
Then maybe it will be excluded. I really can't address that issue. I'll let Mr. Jones. I think that's all the issues that I have.
Yes, the proposed boundary, or this is just a, I probably should put a draft on this. The southerly boundary basically bumped up to the San Juan Valley Water Conservation District. They have adopted a plan or in the process of adopting a groundwater management plan, what we're proposing here. The northern section bumped up to the flood control, San Luis Obispo County Flood Control Water Conservation District, Zone 3, which is the Lopez Project. And so basically, we're not encroaching on other agencies. It is possible if those agencies wish to come in, the boundary can be expanded. The thought, including the Napoleon Valley, is that if we, this agency could get supplemental water, it would be very beneficial to the Napoleon Valley of getting water. And people ask me how much water we need. I say, all right, about 4,000 or 5,000 acre feet, 2,000 acre feet for the district, 3,000 acre feet for Agnes. And that's the intent of what we're doing. If there's any kind of get involved with somebody, says, it's very suspicious, what are these people going to do? The real intent, I think, of the district and everything else is trying to benefit everyone on the Mesa, your sons, your grandkids, and everything else for the beneficial use of water on the Mesa. That is the intent of this. And as the notice went out, it had 4 or 5 things that was on it. That is the overall intent of the thing, is benefiting everyone in the basin.
And if during the next few months, if the resolution of intention is passed tonight, then we start with the process of drafting the plan and planning memberships of the board, and that would be the time when we have the steering committee's inputs and residents' inputs. If during that 150 days there's a group of people that decide they want nothing to do with it, or that is vehemently against inclusion, then those property people will be excluded. So you'll have that input.
The three people get together and say, I don't want to be in that bill. I thought it was excluded.
Can you address that at all, Mr. Jones?
Now, if there's a water company that doesn't want to develop a plan, then they can be excluded. In fact, there is a provision in AB 3030 that says that like one district cannot develop a groundwater management plan in another district area unless the second district board of directors has voted not to develop a plan and agrees that the first district can develop it. So there are a lot of precautions in AB 3030.
I think for your question about the, if you're talking about three individual property owners, if you're seeing the residents' property owners, it would be excluded from the fee structure anyway.
If I could address Supervisor Brackett's question on capital expenditures, what we're finding is that plans are being adopted. I've got a collection of them. I've got about, I guess, about 10 so far. We think about 140 agencies are moving to adopt a 3030 plan. Most of them, none of them talks about funding. And there are some that are 5 pages long and contain very little in terms of accomplishing anything to manage groundwater. But the positive side is that they have at least begun to think about groundwater, and we view them, those plans, as the first step towards groundwater management. And one of the unpopular things that I like to say, I feel that somebody needs to say it, and that is that the cost for water is going to go up no matter whether you like it or not. We've had kind of a free ride here in California for many years, and water costs are going to go up. I talk in a lot of groups, and I always ask them what they pay for their water, and almost nobody, unless they have their own well, can tell me what water costs. And we all know what gasoline costs. So the cost for water is going to go up, and I think people are going to have to learn that it's going to cost them money just by putting plans together. The alternative, somebody described, talking to a consultant last week who is working with a client, a water district, that keeps denying they're an overdraft. And I want to say that you have 2 reports that say you're 4,000 to 6,000 feet in overdraft. It sounds to me like you're overdrafting your basin. But in this other area with this consultant, the water district denies they're an overdraft despite all the evidence. And so he has begun to compare them to drug addicts in denial. I won't tell you who that was.
I'll take a couple questions from the right side. Is there anyone up here? I already grabbed a couple there. Yes. Yeah, go ahead and come on up.
I'd like to go to support of Supervisor's thing. I don't care for the point of the asking our questions. The moment is something we need to talk about the DAC and arbitrary geographical thing for convenience because not the rest of the water district, or is that a genuine geological formation?
I can address that much as the lawyer can. There's been a number of studies, and there's going to be a number of more studies, but the studies generally call out from the southern border of Pismo Beach down to what you would call the southern border of the Santa Maria Valley, as they group it into one district called the Santa Maria Groundwater Basin. All right. Now, within that, and Jim's here, other people, there's what's called aquifers, which are what they basically call subunits, that there's a geographical boundary of one formation or another that kind of separates these basins out from one another. Now, there are 3 basins that most geologists will agree to, or at least they'll say that's a good possibility. The one is the Tri-Cities Mesa, which is down, typically considered to be Grover Beach, Arroyo Grande, the Oceano area, and the valley that comes between there with all the aggregates. That is generally considered to be one subunit. The next subunit is the Mesa subunit, which is the one that's right over, pretty much over the Mesa. The next one is a huge one, which is considered the San Maria Alluvial Plain, is the third one. Now, in between each of those subunits is a geographical boundary, a solid boundary, that most engineers will say contains the water or creates a barrier for water to migrate in and out. In other words, as most people may know, the Santa Maria Alluvial Plain Valley is depending on who you're talking to, the severe overcrowding. I mean, they're taking in a lot of state water to try and alleviate that. It, that severe overdraft does not appear to be having a huge effect on the Napoleon Mesa subunit or the Tri-City subunit, but there's a barrier between them that one way or the other prevents huge migrations of water between the subunit basins.
Could you come a little closer to the mic, please?
It comes from rainfall, precipitation. It's a hydrologic balance. The water evaporates from the ocean, comes over, drops in drink, gets into the rocks. The first study that was done in groundwater was done in Paris. An engineer measured the precipitation that occurred in Paris. Then he measured what flowed out of the basin. And what he found was that a lot less flowed out than stayed in. And that's when he began to think in terms of water percolating into the rocks.
In that case, the water I was talking about is just us and not saying